Want more of the Josh Scanlon podcast?
Please. Please.
Here you go. The Josh Scanlon podcast starts right now. Yeah! Welcome to the Josh Scanlon podcast. This episode first appeared as a video on my YouTube channel at youtube.com/heritagewealthplanning. I hope you find it informative. Thanks. Welcome to another edition of the Heritage Wealth Planning YouTube channel, my friends. Let's make sure we got my light looking good there. There you go. Fantastic. Today is May 14th, 2018. Hope you had a happy Mother's Day yesterday. Here in Atlanta, Georgia, it's 91 degrees and it was hot and muggy. Summer is here and I got eaten alive by mosquitoes outside as I was doing some landscaping. But that's not why you're here. You are here today because I'm going to show you how to analyze mutual funds. This is a it's an area that gets way overlooked. And we got so many resources out there, folks, that it's impeccable for you to understand how to do this for sure. Impeccable? That's not the right word. Whatever. It's important, I guess, for you to understand how to do this for sure. Because there's a lot of info in mutual funds that if you're not cognizant of, can really come up and bite you in the butt later on down the road, especially comes tax time. So let me close out this guy. I'm going to use the Vanguard Life Strategy Growth Fund because that's what I talked about in my last episode when we're discussing what to use for an index or a benchmark, I should say. This is a good benchmark to use for your, if you have an investment management firm, if you're doing it yourself and you run your own money. Again, at the end of the day, you need to find a good benchmark to compare your investments to. And if that benchmark is convoluted like these investment management firms are, it's hypothetical, it's theoretical, it's irrelevant because you can't invest in it. You can't. Whereas investor, the Vanguard fund, you can. And the reason you can, because it has these tickers. Five letters for a ticker is a mutual fund. 1 to 3 is typically New York Stock Exchange. 4 is usually NASDAQ. There's tons of variations of this, but generally speaking, if you see 5 letters, it's a mutual fund. Anything less than that is traded as a stock, either on the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ. I don't even know if they have the American Stock Exchange anymore. I really don't pay that much mind to the various intricacies of stock market investing anymore. And that's why I still have my hair. All right. So anyway, let's look at this. So this is the Vanguard Life Strategy Growth Fund Investor Shares. An investor just simply means at Vanguard, they got investor share classes and Admiral share classes. The investor share class just means it costs a little bit less. So let's go over to quote. We're going to start here. I got to show where I'm at here. This is Morningstar. So if you go to Morningstar.com and you just type in the ticker up here, all right, that's all you do. So Morningstar.com, the vast majority of the stuff they have at Morningstar is free. I'm a huge fan of what Morningstar, I guess it's going to take me right back to the homepage here. Let's see where it takes me back to. I'm a huge fan of what Morningstar has done in the early start. I guess Morningstar started in like 1985 or something like that, way, way, way back in the day. And the earlier iterations, Morningstar ratings, these star ratings, 4, 5, 1 through 5 star ratings were just inferior. No getting around that. And I think it was up in 2001, I think, is when they made the pretty significant structural change, which makes it a lot more legitimate now. Just giving how this works is only the top 12.5%, I believe, is in the top. It only gets 5 stars. So any given year, I don't even know where my calculator. Here's my calculator. There's my phone too. So any given year, only 12.5% of the funds out there get the 5-star ratings, which means the rest are divided up. I think it's 22.5 times 4, something like that. So it's like 22.5% get 1, 2, 3, and 4. And only a small fraction of the funds that they analyze get the 5-star rating. So if they have a 5-star rating in of itself, that, I mean, whatever, but that's a pretty select group of people or funds. And so that's why when everybody gets, oh, Morningstar 5-star rated funds, they never maintain 5-star going forward. Well, there's some validity to that argument actually, but yeah, because they were in literally rarefied air when they're in the top 12.5%. Not literally. That'd be they. I struggle to when people use the word literally, but it's not literally happening. But they're in rarefied air when they're at 12.5% for the 5-star ratings. So if it goes back and forth between 4 and 5-star funds, or even stays consistently at 4, I'm very comfortable that and just give you a thought process. If you look at Morningstar, and I have an article on this on my blog about Morningstar ratings, their 4 and 5 star ratings generally outperform, not by much, talk about 25 basis points or so over the course of 10 to 15 years, but 25 basis points, that's 0.25% is enough that is worth your money for sure. And the reason that they do is because of fees. Morningstar typically rewards higher ratings because it's based on performance, it's based on stability, it's based on risk. So they're basically getting higher performance for lower risk and lower fees, and you just simply can't go wrong. Very rarely does a 4-star fund fall into a 1 or 2. I've seen it happen with 5-star funds because typically if they're hitting that rarefied air, they're swinging for triples and home runs. Every now and again, they're going to strike out. And when they do, the fund will be way up here. Boom, boom. And that's what happened to Bill Miller in the Legg Mason Value Trust Fund, which was tearing it up for many, many, many years. Bill Miller is the only guy who beat the S&P 500 15 years in a row, even though he attributed a lot of that to luck, to his credit. But at the end of the day, he still did. He beat the S&P 500 15 years in a row. And then he was all the cats meow. And then he had a couple bad, about 18 months that were quite poor. And he fell off the cliff and was only one-star fund for a couple years hence. So, you know, there's an exception to every rule, but generally speaking, the vast majority of 4 and 5-star funds are going to be consistent performance, low fees, and a little bit outperformance. And so that's why I'm very comfortable in using Morningstar and recommending them their usage too for their fund ratings for sure. All right, so but enough of that. So let's look at how you analyze. So I'm at the quote. So I typed in VASGX. VASGX and the Morningstar stock thing up here to get the quote. And we're going to get the NAV, net asset value. That's just a price, okay? And then we're going to get what it did in the one day. I literally could care less. We got TTM. If I can make this bigger. I don't know how to make it bigger. TTM is trailing 12-month yield. Now, I've talked about the difference between yield in the past. So just remember, difference between yield and actual dividend and or interest you're receiving. Yield is irrelevant for anybody else other than an investor who's going to buy the fund shares today. If I own the shares, I could care less what the yields are simply because I already bought it. The only time I care about the yield is when I'm about to make the purchase. That's it. Every other time is irrelevant. Every other time is irrelevant. So if it has 2.1% yield over the last 12 months, that just simply means the price and the dividends it's paying have met right here to give you 2.1% dividend. It's already happened. So you buy today, that is the yield you're going to get as of today relative to the share price. I'm not going to go into that too much. I've already talked about that. The 30-day SEC yield, and so this is different. The trailing 12 months, what happened over the last 12 months. 30-day SEC yield is what happened over the last 30 days. We always want to look at the 30-day SEC yield if we're going to think about buying a mutual fund. Absolutely. I don't much care about the trailing 12 months. And folks, especially when it comes to a bond fund, I cannot tell you the shenanigans, deliberately or ignorant, I don't know. But people look at the trailing 12-month yield and say, oh, I'm getting 6.5%. It's not necessarily true. For the love of Mary, understand how this works. There could have been a special dividend, a special interest payment. There could have been something that happened that made the dividend yield or the interest yield jump up out of the grave when actually it's paying 2.07. And I was at USAA. We did this back in 2009. It was not shenanigans. They just need, I can't remember why they did it. But if you looked at a Morningstar or Yahoo chart on you at one of the funds we had at USAA, it looked like it's paying 7.4, something like that, something insane. And absolutely was not. It just had a special interest payment. I forgot what it was and I forgot what fund it was, but just had a special interest payment that's pretty significant. And that made the trailing 12-month yield look significantly higher than what it was. I literally do not care about that. I care about the 30-day SEC yield, and you should too. If you're going to buy something, you could care less what the trailing 12 months are. You want the 30-day SEC yield. Total assets is important. If you're doing index funds, as you should be, total assets is almost irrelevant. But generally speaking, the bigger the fund, the less nimble it can be. On an index type of fund, it doesn't matter. We don't need to be nimble. On a actively managed fund, like a small cap fund, a Royce Pennsylvania fund, that's the one that always comes to mind because I like it. If they have billions and billions and billions of dollars of assets and they're investing in micro cap and small companies, it's going to be awful hard to move that battleship. It really is like turning a battleship on a dime. It's not going to happen. And it's going to be tough for them to do anything without creating a market movement just from the fact they're buying or selling. So, you know, if it's an index fund, doesn't matter. If it's a small, if it's a an actively managed fund, generally speaking, you want the assets to be small, you know, less than 100 million, less than, probably less than a billion, I suppose, just to be nimble. The larger the fund is, the less nimble it can be. And frankly, if they find positions they want to buy, but they have tons and tons and tons of money, then they're going to have to buy secondary and tertiary positions they don't want to buy. And so we generally speak, we want to keep the asset base as low as possible. But for index funds, it doesn't matter. This is the big one right here, expenses, 0.14. The average equity stock mutual fund is about 1.2. Now, you'll see these different things. In fact, Morningstar does it. They say the average fund is 0.6. That's all inclusive. That's all share classes, institutional and bond funds as well. I don't care about the average when I'm looking at a specific mutual fund type. I just care about the average specific to that type. If I'm looking at a bond fund and it's charging me 0.75 and the average mutual fund is only 0.65, I could be very quickly to misread that to say, oh, this fund's not that expensive relative to the average fund. You know, and that's true. That's a hell of a lot of expensive relative to the average bond fund, though. So the expenses in of itself relative to the average mutual fund completely is irrelevant. It's the expenses relative to the average category that you're looking at investing, which again is why indexing makes sense, because you don't have to get that detailed. Just buy the doggone index and you know you're going to pay a low fee. Generally speaking, there are index funds out there that aren't low, but basically, you know, an index fund of running 0.1 to 0.25 is pretty cheap and that's just fine. Turnover rate. Okay, so this is what I want to talk about. So turnover is 6% here. That means if it has 100 stocks, it will have traded six of those stocks over the course of a year, if that makes sense. All right, so they basically have six. They move the position 6% of the time over the course of a year, which is incredibly low. The turnover rate is can give you an idea of the tax consequences that will come to you if you have this fund outside of an IRA. Now, there's more to it than a story than this. I wrote a pretty long blog post on that as well, which I'll post to in the show notes here. Turnover rate, though, is one mechanism to get a gauge of how active the portfolio is. And if it's active, it's going to have a lot of turnover, which means it potentially could have a lot of capital gains that you as a shareholder have to pay, even if you don't sell the stock or mutual fund, I should say. And so we really want to keep our eyes and ears peeled on turnover. Secondly, a turnover is absolutely indicative of the fees it's going to pay. Unfortunately, the turnover is not reflected in here. And this is another pet peeve of mine when it comes to funds, actively managed funds as well. If you have a high turnover fund, let's just say 100%, that means it flips the entirety of the portfolio once a year. If you have a high turnover fund, that means it costs a lot of money in trading expenses. And normal people would think trading expenses would be part of the expense ratio. And normal people are wrong because we don't know what the trading costs are. It's not in the SEC reports, not in the prospectuses, and not in the 10-Ks, wherever they file for mutual funds. They don't file. There's no additional statement of additional information when it comes to trading costs on a mutual fund. So we have no clue what they're paying for a 6% turnover. But because they're only turning over the portfolio 6% of the time, you can be pretty safe to assume that the trading costs are incredibly low. Now, if they're trading over a significant portfolio, like say 100% or 150%, you can be pretty safe in assuming the trading costs are quite high. There's a huge caveat to this, which is why you should read my blog post. If the portfolio is relatively small in asset size, all right, say it's $200 million portfolio and they have a high turnover rate, 50%, we'll say, that means it's only turnover basically $100 million a year in assets, and that's not much. And so that means the trading costs will probably be lower than the portfolio with a low trading cost that's high in assets. Yes, as confusing as all can be. Generally speaking, though, if it's a high asset base here over a couple billion bucks and has a high turnover rate, you can rest assured it's going to have a high portfolio trading transaction cost, which will not be reflected here, but certainly it's going to affect returns. Absolutely. If it's a low asset base, even if the turnover rate's high, it's probably not going to cost you an arm and a leg in trading costs because there's not much actual trading being done when it comes to the overall scheme of things in terms of portfolio size. I know it's convoluted, but just keep that in the back of your mind. The best way to ensure a low trading cost is to get a low turnover fund with indexes, all right? Because there's just not much trading in indexes. They do a little bit of trading, but because it's low turnover and they're not trying to beat the market or anything like that, there's going to be low turnover and most likely lower trading cost than a high turnover fund, regardless of asset base. I know that's confusing, but you got to understand it. And if you don't, just that's fine. Just read my blog post on that. All right, so what else do we want to look at? They gave us a little analyst report. This is the we got paid for. And this just gives us performance over, how far can we go back? This is first time I've looked at this for a while. Over the last 10 years, blew over this part right here. Category, allocation, equity, 70% to 85% stocks. Oh, that's what it says, allocation. 70-85% equity. We've already talked about this. It's about an 80-20 stock to bond portfolio. Investment style, large blend. The predominant amount of its equities, stocks are in large companies, but they do have nice exposure to midsize and a little bit to small caps. Credit quality, interest rate sensitivity, mid-moderate. Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. What I can take a gamble, a guess what that means, but it's not relevant to what I'm trying to accomplish here. Well, let me just talk about that. I guess if you had a high duration bond fund, which would have a high credit quality interest rate sensitivity rating. I don't want to dive into duration here in this episode, but the higher the duration, the more volatile the price of the bonds will be. Generally, a higher duration fund will have longer maturities and lower yields or lower coupons, I should say. Not yields, coupons. It's easy to get those intertwined and not. So if you want a lower volatility fund, you want shorter yields and higher coupons. If you want a higher volatility fund on the bond side, you want longer yields and lower coupons. I'm not going to get the reasons for that, why that's the case. But if it's a lower coupon and long yields, long maturities, this will probably say high. If it's a shorter maturities and higher coupons, this will probably say low for the bond side. Because this is a bulk as a fixed an equity fund with about 20% exposure to bonds, it's not that big of a deal for credit interest rate sensitivity. Actually, I do want to see some. So this fund came out in 1994, I think. So let's just see if it lets us to do, I'm going to see if it changes the term, if we can do, if it allows us to go back to, oh yeah, sweet. All right, that's cool. I did not know Morningstar did. This is fantastic. All right, so this goes back to is what you want to go back to in terms of the inception. Let's go back to inception then. I saw it on there. Let's go here, maximum. That's fantastic. So this will allow you to go back since inception, 9/30/1994, till Friday. Was that today? Till yesterday when the market wasn't open. That's pretty cool. So you can see how 10,000 would have done in this portfolio going back to when it started. And you can compare it to, let's see, what is this here? That's the allocation. That's the Morningstar moderate target risk total return. No, I don't know. See, this is where I talk about the benchmark. I don't know what that is. What is that? I don't know. Morningstar will define it someplace, I'm sure, but I don't know and frankly don't really care, but whatever, this fund did better than that, but that doesn't mean anything. I don't know what it is. I couldn't invest in that if I wanted to. An allocation of 70. Yeah, I'm not sure what this orange is either. So that doesn't mean anything. I mean, I appreciate saying this fund has done better than these two things, but again, that doesn't tell you much. It looks like you can cancel out of that if you want. And I'm wondering if you can add a different. Yeah, I don't see how you could add anything there. It's too bad. All right, so that's the fund. I wish you could add. Let's see. Does it let you add? It'd be sweet if it let us add something here. Hold on just a second, my friends. Well, that's a drink of water. All right, sweet. So this will take us to the chart, and I'm not ready to go there yet. But it looks like it does allow you to add your own a fund you want to compare it to if you wanted to. So that's all right, let's see. Event moving average, don't care. Benchmark, see, that's a benchmark. Yeah, morning indices. Let's just look at that guy. So we're going to look at how this fund did relative to the S&P 500. Let's get rid of that guy. Let's get rid of that guy. These are the benchmarks that are irrelevant because no one knows what they are. You can't invest in it. Here's the S&P 500 and the S&P 500 going back to 10 years, exactly 10 years, has done better than our fund here. I'm going to compare. Let's see here. I'm going to compare NAESX as a Vanguard. Yeah, here we go. Sweet. Oh, yeah. All right. So here, that's fantastic. So I want to go back. We're going to say this is what I did my video I did yesterday on benchmarking and the silliness that comes with. Let me do that. Or do I got to hit custom? Still want me to go back. Let's do this. Just go back to. It's thinking. So I want to go back. All right. There, 90. Okay. There we go. So it works. So there we go. All right. So this was. Exactly. This is exactly what I was trying to show you yesterday in terms of the benchmark silliness. So these are two funds you could literally invest in. This is the S&P 500. That's a Vanguard Small Cap Index, the Russell 2000. And going back to 2000, our portfolio in the blue here, you know, kept neck and neck with the S&P 500 because it's predominantly in large cap domestic stocks. But this is a small cap index, which smoked it. No other way around that. And that would make me believe it should be because small caps are more aggressive, more riskier. In fact, you can see here is a pretty significant sell-off in 2016, like I was telling you about, a couple more here, 2015, a big one there, a huge one here. So that's small caps. You're hopefully to get more on the upside because you're swinging for doubles and triples and even a home run on occasion, but you're certainly more willing to strike out as well. But anyway, so that's good. I wasn't aware that Morningstar gave us that kind of chart stuff. I've been so used to using Yahoo that I like that quite a bit. So, okay, good. I'm a fan. Again, also it's free. I don't pay anything for this. That's why I like Morningstar. It's free. You can buy more info if you want, but why would you? You're not, it doesn't make sense. Yeah, just buy the index and be done with it and go plant some trees or something like that as opposed to sitting here all day long. Oh, stock this, stock that, who cares? All right, so at the end of the day, let's keep going back. There is a couple of important things I want to show you here. Not that other stuff wasn't important. Just waiting for the Wi-Fi to kick in. All right, so let's keep going back. We talked about the growth of 10,000 over the last 15, 20, however long you want to do it. It's pretty cool. That's not what I want to show you here. So how's it going out there in YouTube land? Jeez Louise, I want to show you this right here. Dividends and capital gain distributions is what I'm trying to show. There we go. All right. Don't do anything for me. Wi-Fi. All right. So we showed you the growth thing. That's pretty cool. You know, I can pause this. I can pause this, actually. I'm going to do that. All right. So here comes performance down here. And this is pretty good. Year to date, 1 month, 10-year. I like that. So it says, you know, simply growth of 10,000 bucks over the last 10 years. It grew to 18.4 to 49,000, which meant it returned 6.32, which is better than the Morningstar moderate target risk total return benchmark. It's better than its category. Rank percent ratings ranked in its category is in the 45% rank. And the number of funds in the category is 201. So it did better than 55% of funds over that 10-year time frame. It did worse than 45%. Okay, at the end of the day, though, what funds have done better? What kind of risks have they taken? And frankly, are they net of fees, actually? All right, but whatever. I mean, so at the end of the day, 5 years in the top 25%, and that's kind of what we're trying to see. If we can maintain consistency in the top 25, we're doing pretty well. And I'd rather see it a little bit better than that. Frankly, I think probably part of the reason why it's a little bit lagging relative to some of its peers as those 20%. But I don't know that for sure. Top 10 holdings, this is what I love. It tells you the holdings and could not get any simpler, stupid. Four holdings, my friends, four. Total stock index, total bond index, and total international stock index, total international bond index. All right. But this is what I want to talk about. So here in June of 2017 and December of 2017, it paid a dividend distribution, short-term capital gain, and dividend income. So we have distributions of 40 cents. Right here, the distribution total on 33.75 is NAV. So what does that mean? So we take our trusty calculator, we go 0.3995 5 divide into the price per share the day it made those distributions. That's a 1.18% distribution yield. And we do the same here. It has to be 0.1%. So basically what we're doing is we're saying at the end of the day, it distributed 40 cents on a share price of 33, roughly. Here it distributed 32 cents on a share price of roughly 32. And that gives us about 2.02% as a dividend distribution and interest distribution over the last 12 months. And then we go back up here and we say, trailing 12 months, 2.1% distribution yield. But why do I hark on that's not that big of a deal? Because let's go down. What if it had a special dividend in here? What if nothing else was distributed for the last 3 or 4 years and all of a sudden we had a special dividend from one? You know, Apple did that a few years back. Well, you bought this fund under the assumption or the auspices that you're going to get those dividend yields on a regular basis. Well, if this is the only thing sitting out and all these other things are zero, because this is the amount of dividends it distributes throughout December, June. And if it only had that one thing, then you're buying a thing that shows a dividend yield trailing 12 months. That's absolutely not correct. I mean, it's correct for it happening, but it's not correct for what you can presume it going forward. And so what we see here is we have an interest on December. We have interest paying short-term capital gain. We had a long-term capital gain there in 2015. So let me show you something. This is a good example here. Distribution total. This is at the end of 2015. Now, I don't know what it did in June of 2015. This is actually important. This is 94 cents you got 94 cent distribution for each share you owned of this fund, and each share traded at 27 bucks. So what we do is we take 0.947, divide that into 27.61. We had a 3.4% distribution yield right there. And that's not even including what we had in June. And it looks like June was another 1%. Now this is 2016. So if we were going back in time to where we are today in May of 2016, we would look at this and say, oh, it has a 4.5% dividend capital gain and dividend distribution yield. And you would say, that's pretty good. Well, it's pretty good because something happened in here that made it have a significantly higher capital gain distribution, which is right there. 61 cents on the shares. Something happened. And look, they don't historically have much of capital gain. So if you look since 16 and 17, they've had none. So that was the outlier. What caused that to happen? Well, they might have sold a stock within the fund and they had no capital loss carry forwards to offset it. There's tons and tons and tons of different things that could happen to make this be an outlier. Two things going on. One is that is your taxable distribution. All this is taxable is ordinary income. Not as ordinary income, but it's all taxable to you on your 1040. And I don't have my 1040 chart here. It's going to be line capital gains on line 13. Dividend interest is on line 9. And interest on bond interest is on line 8. So 8, 9, and 13 will show money there, which is you has to flow to your bottom line for you to pay tax to Uncle Sam on that. Now, I don't know what caused a 61 cent long-term capital gain distribution. I mean, I know what caused it. They sold something for a profit. Not too shabby. But you got hit with, again, about 4% dividend distribution. That's fact. So let's just let that play out. If you had $100,000 in this fund and you did not sell it, you now have $4,000 of taxable income. All right, that's what's going to flow to your bottom line. You have to pay tax on $4,000, even if you didn't sell the fund. All right, so I'm just curious, what did it do in 2015? Let's see if it shows us a year over year. Yeah, I'm sure it does. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure it will show us year to year, but how long it takes me to go around this thing. But let's just say your fund in 2015, let's say it was down in 2015. I think it might have been actually like 3%. So you start with 100,000 bucks. At the end of 2015, it was only worth 97,000. So you lost paper, $3,000. But then you got a dividend distribution of, you got 1099, in January of 2016 of 4,000 bucks. So you lost $3,000 in appreciation, a capital reduction, 100,000 to 97. And on top of that, you got hit with a $4,000 tax bill. That's how mutual funds work, my friends. And it's gonna get worse and worse and worse. I'm gonna show you what I mean here in just a second. Now, if this isn't an IRA or 401k or something like that, it wouldn't matter. But anytime you have non-qualified accounts, you got to be looking at this right here because that will flow back to your bottom line as taxable income. And taxable income can literally hurt you from a performance perspective and cause other things to be taxed. Medicare, we talked about, Social Security, we talked about, and all that stuff. All right. So what I want to show you now is I want to go over to tax because this is incredibly important. Again, if it's in an IRA, it doesn't matter. Anything that comes out will be taxed as ordinary income. No ifs, ands, or buts. It does not matter. You pull $10 out, you're paying $10 of taxes of $10 as ordinary income. You pull $10 million out, you're paying ordinary. But I want to show you this. All right, I love this right here. Pre-tax return. We're just use 15 years here. All right, so 15-year pre-tax return, 8.14. That's what you've averaged over 15 years. Not too shabby. And I've already shown you, basically, you would have put $100,000 in this portfolio in 2000. It's worth like $250,000 today. So there you go, roughly 8% year-over-year rate of return. Percent rate and category, it's in a, let's see, tax-adjusted return. Okay, right there. Tax-adjusted returns. We've lost 8.14 minus 7.44. So we lost 70 basis points on taxes. So we take 8.14, so minus 0.7, that gives us 7.44. So set 0.7% time divided by 8.14. That means we've lost almost a full percentage point in taxes, my friends. Almost a full percentage point in taxes we've lost. Even that, almost losing a full percentage point, we are still in the 14% category in terms of tax effectiveness. So remember when we're looking at returns, because all that matter is what you get back in your pocket. And I've shown you something. I've shown the returns were only in the 45%. And that takes a while. The returns were only in the 45%. All right, so we're in the 40, basically the top half for all of our peers in terms of overall returns. That's what this fund was. Top half, only the 45%. I'd like to try to get in the top 25%. And that's where we should be for a 4 to 5 star fund, using the top 25%. But those returns, I probably should never clicked on this, it's gonna take forever. But let's see if we can figure it out. Those returns are gonna be pre-tax, pre-tax. And the reason they do that, it only makes sense because a lot of people are gonna have their funds in IRAs. And if you're going to show post-tax return in IRAs, that's silly because no one's paid tax until they pull the money out. I should never have done that. Here, let me pause for just a second. Right. So I just had to pause it so this could load up for me. So look, so here's our 10-year return. Remember that I said percent rank and category, 45%. All right. Now that's only 6.32 because we're only using 10-year. But 45%, someone said, oh, that's not that good. You know, that's in the top half. That's good, but I'd rather be in the top quarter. Well, that's all pre-tax. So let's go back to the tax up here. All right, there. Yep, I'm gonna show what I'm talking about. Right, so now we're going to the tax. Remind me never to go back and forth. All right, here we all right. So here's right here. Remember that? Six, we're gonna go to 10. 6.16 after tax, 5.38, which means tax cost ratio, where we are from a tax perspective, is we are in the top 24%, top quarter of our peers, net of taxes. And that's what I want to see. I want to see that, especially if this is in a taxable account. Over 15 years, we're in the top roughly eighth of our peers, net of taxes. And that's all that matters, my friends. That is all that matters. Not before tax, but after tax. Now, before tax, again, if it's an IRA, we're talking difference. But if you received a 1099, that means it's not an IRA, which means you are going to be needing to understand the tax ramifications. And if you look, 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 year, 15 years. Your tax cost, your percent ranking category for tax adjusted returns. That's, I mean, you just can't beat that. You can't beat this fund for that. Even if the gross returns look less stellar, the after-tax returns look better. So let's see if it tells us our load adjusted. That means if you have a mutual fund that charges a capital gain. I'm not sure if it tells us. Yeah. And what they're doing on taxes is they're going to assume the capital gain. They're going to assume the dividend income is qualified. Capital gain is long-term capital gain. If it's short-term capital gain, they're going to tax as ordinary income. They're actually going to assume that you're in the highest tax bracket. And that, you know, is probably not you. So if you're not in the highest tax bracket, you'll have a little bit higher in terms of after-tax performance relative to some of the funds that are out there. Some, because this is assuming you're in the highest tax bracket, okay? But all the other funds do the same thing. So when you compare apples to apples, don't adjust it for your tax bracket, because the other funds you're going to look at are going to do the same thing here. They're going to adjust it based on the SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission, dictates that you got to assume it's in the highest tax bracket. Now, there's what I want to point out to you. Remember they have that big long-term capital gain distribution 2015? Well, they got 38% of the portfolio is in a capital gain exposure right now. So over a third of the portfolio is a gain that has yet to be taxed. Now, it's not just this fund. Every fund that's out there is going to have this, because what happened was in 2007 and 2008, we had so many losses. Astute financial planners and astute investment managers were selling stuff in order to get capital losses, to lock in their losses, so that way they could use those losses at some point in the future to write off against future gains, because they figured, well, in the long run, I'm gonna sell these positions, lock in some losses. That way in the future, when the market goes back up, I don't have to send a bunch of 1099 distributions to my investors and have them scream bloody murder, because I'll be able to write those gains off with my losses that I carried forward. Those days are long gone. There is no loss carry forwards anymore. I mean, some funds might have it, but the vast, vast, vast majority don't. So that just tells you right there that over a third of the portfolio, if it was 100% turnover, just give an example, you're going to have a significant capital gain distribution to you. So the higher the turnover, the higher the exposure to capital gains, the more taxes you're going to pay in terms of 1099 that they send to you in a non-qualified account. And you got to pay attention to that, because all I care about my return is after tax returns. I could care less about pre-tax. I care about after tax. If you have a high turnover portfolio with high exposure to capital gains, that just means you're going to get hit and hit hard with capital, with 1099s. On top of that, that doesn't include your dividends, doesn't include your interest income either. So let's, again, if they sold the entirety of this portfolio today and you had $100,000 in there, you're going to get a 1099 for $38,460. And I would presume the bulk of that would be long-term gain, which would be taxed at 15% most likely, but I don't know that to be true. Some of it's going to be short-term gain, which is taxed as ordinary income. But at the end of the day, that's what you're looking at. You're looking at potential cap gain exposure. High turnover funds, large potential cap gain exposure is a message, you're cruising for a bruising there from a tax man's perspective. We don't want that to happen. All right, and so that's a big one I wanted to talk about there. We talked about expense, and they're doing something on Morningstar for sustainability, and I just want to, because we hate to have greenhouse gases. My goodness, greenhouse gases. But yet, if you ask the guys who run all these firms, they're flying all over God's creation and touting their portfolio investment prowess. And if you're worried about greenhouse gases, you can't be getting on the plane, my friend. It's just those two things are mutually exclusive. Can't be flying around the country if you got greenhouse gas you're concerned with. Just they're mutually exclusive. And that just drives me crazy that we have this thing now. It's virtue signaling. Oh, we're so worried about the environment. We have a thing for sustainability and carbon. Well, then why are you flying all over the world then? Yeah. End of story. All right. So let's see. Expense ratio is another one relative to category. Again, relative to category. Expense. So remember, we talked about that. We talked about your expense relative to the average fund. I could care less about that. And here we'll see that we're well below the average category here. So Morningstar average is, and for this category is 0.78, 0.82, 0.82, 0.81. fee level comparison. So a lot of people would run you fees 1% or so, and we aren't anywhere near that with this fund. This fund's 0.14. Not sure why they don't put it up here. That's weird. But just remember, we looked at on the front page of this website for this ticker, and it's 0.14. So we are significantly, significantly below the average in this category for aggressive stocks, 80% stocks, 20% bond portfolios. That's and then it gives us total cost projection based on expenses. For every $10,000 in there, you're going to pay $179 in 10 years' time. 10 years' time. Oh, there's a net expense ratio. Yeah, 0.14. I don't know why it's not up here. That's weird. But anyway, so 0.14 right there is an expense ratio for the fund. Now, folks, low fees, low turnover are what you need to consider for the benefit of your portfolio. No, hands down, low fees, low turnover. If you have high fees, high turnover, and then you throw in large exposure to capital gains, it's a recipe for disaster. So here's the fee level median. So that's if you're hiring somebody to run your money for you, that's the average they're going to charge you, which is, let's just put it this way, it's a heck of a lot more than $179 over the course of 10 years. So the question is, are they going to earn that for you? No. A couple will, most won't. Do you know who those couple will in advance? Nope. Is it possible to know who they are in advance? Yep. So just don't do it and buy a fund like this, because you know it's low turnover, low fee. It still has the same capital gain exposure, but because it's low turnover, that means it's not going to be problematic as much to you, most likely. Also, because it's low turnover, that simply means there's going to be lower fees, there are trading costs that you can't see in any report either. So it's a win-win-win-win, four times over. Absolutely. Let's see what else I want to show you on this guy. We already talked about performance, so we've already looked at that portfolio. We talked about that. You can look at how much it costs to get in. I do like to look at management, actually. I want to see who the folks are running this fund. Now, these are index funds. Used to be a guy named Gus Sauter, ran the equity funds for Vanguard. I think he's since retired. A lot of times it's just an algorithm, frankly, anymore. For index funds, it's literally just trading. Not high frequency trading, but just, in fact, fund advisors, just a Vanguard group. So Vanguard and their index fund data scientists are running this. The person who's like, oh, I think we should go over there instead of over there, it doesn't work like that. But generally speaking, if you're looking at a fund and you see some fresh-eyed kid from Harvard on here, you don't want him experimenting with your money. You just don't. So it says fund inception 1994. We got fund advisor, Joe Schmo from Harvard, and he just started in September 2017. And get out of Dodge. I don't want him experimenting with my money. That's a fact. So you just got to look at that, who your manager is. We want the gray beards. We had a lady when I was at USAA, and I forgot her name, but she was running the Ginnie Mae Fund for like 25 years. I forgot who she was. And when she retired, USAA changed from all Ginnie Mae to a government bond fund. And I know that had something to do with her leaving, because she let go of the reins, and that's fine. I can't remember her name. But anyway, but I know that when that fund was her baby, she ran it for many, many years, and she did a wonderful job. So now they hired some new people in there, rightly or wrongly, and they wanted to change the dynamics of the fund. And, again, I don't want those people experimenting with my client's money or my own. Ratings and risk. I'm not really going to get into that, because basically if it's a stock fund, it's going to have risk. That's for sure. The ratings are up here from Morningstar. We already talked about performance. Let's just see. I want to see if it shows year by year. Bear with me just a second, folks. All right. So let's see. Year by year, and let's see if it shows us year by year. If not, Yahoo does, which I like. And you can kind of dive into this as much and as deep as you want, for sure. I'm just showing what I look at. And, at the end of the day, the performance historically doesn't matter much to me, just because it's already happened. Previous performance, not end of a future performance. Doesn't really show us year by year, but I'm sure it's on here someplace. Actually, let's just see. 2015. Yeah, it doesn't show for the whole year. It's too bad, because I'd like to see if 2015. Yeah, look at that. So it was down 2015. Man, look. Down. So isn't that funny? You did lose money in 2015 in this fund, and yet you got hit with that $4,000 distribution for every $100,000 you had in there. So that's a pain. A lot of people are not going to be happy with that, for sure. And then you can see performance relative to the category here. We underperformed the cat or overperformed the category when it's going down. Category is going down 7% there. We're going down less than 7. When it's going up, we're going up 3.77. Category is going up 3.26. So just all in all, good fun. No getting around that for sure. That's pretty much it. Hope this was helpful. Just to wrap this up, I want to see a couple things. The expenses, the portfolio turnover. All right, the expenses of portfolio turnover. Those are two things that are critically important. I also want to see the Morningstar ratings. Yep, I do. A lot of people say, oh, I don't pay attention to them. Well, they're wrong. You should. So expenses, portfolio turnover, ratings. I want to see the after-tax return. Hugely important. Hugely important. After-tax return. I want to see the distributions they've had. The SEC 30-day yield is a critical one for me. SEC 30-day yield is what I'm looking for. I want to see who the manager is. Has that guy or lady been running it for a while, or is he or she brand spanking new? All these things are going to lead me to my decision of whether or not to invest my hard-earned money in this fund right here. If you don't look at any of those, you're making a big mistake. There's just no two getting ways around that. So look at those things and figure it out. If you need help, just call me. I'll help you, or email me or whatever. But at the end of the day, this is important for you to figure out on your own because it's critical. It's not that hard to get, and it's free. It's free. All right, so that's it for this episode. Don't forget to give me a thumbs up. Thumbs up, always helpful. Subscribe down below. Hit that little bell for be notified of future content. And comments, man, comments always helpful to me, always helpful. So if you had a bad experience with a mutual fund that you thought was going to hit home runs and instead you struck out with the bases loaded, I'd love to hear it. So don't forget to go to heritagewealthplanning.com. That's the website, the Josh Scanlon podcast. Don't forget to visit there. And then we'll see you next time on the Heritage Wealth Planning YouTube channel. Thanks, guys.